lover's spat struck in my chest. Jin hit Ahmed so fast, even I couldn't get between them. It was impressive, actually. Iz screamed again, further away. The chaos was settling down. I have to go, Shahzad said. We were out of time. I'm going to figure out a way to get you out of here. Until then, stay out of trouble. It came out halfway between an order from my general and a plea from my friend. You know better than to ask a Demji to make a promise. This might be the last I ever saw of her. That was true every time we parted, but this time more than ever. Now I was on enemy ground. And you know better than to believe I'm going to stay out of trouble. Chapter 23. I had a plan. Well, plan might be a strong word. Shahzad was the plan maker between the two of us. This was more like the beginnings of an idea that I was hoping wouldn't get me killed, which was more my style. I could figure out the rest of it later. For now, I didn't need to get free of the palace. I just had to get out of the harem. And there was only one man who could make it happen.
Why do you want to leave?
Layla was making another toy for the harem's children, though I wasn't sure why. Most of their mothers wouldn't let them play with the toys she'd already made. Was this just her way of keeping herself sane in this place where she fits so badly? This one looked like a tiny person. He lay forgotten in her hands, clay limbs splayed, as she looked at me with her huge, earnest eyes.
The harem is nicer than a lot of other places you could wind up.
I liked Layla. A part of me wanted to blurt out the honest truth, make her a real ally here in this place. But she was still the Sultan's daughter, and big, innocent eyes weren't a good enough reason to gamble with the lives of everyone I loved. Jin's face flashed across my mind. The way I'd last seen him, half-shadowed in the tent, on the run, uncertainty hanging between us as the kiss ended. His face was quickly chased away by others. Shahzad, Ahmed, Delilah, the twins, even Hala. It'd be nice to be able to get out of the path of your brother, I said finally. I mean Kadir, I corrected, remembering that she'd told me about her only real brother being the one who shared her mother. Prince Rahim, the soldier among scholars in the Sultan's circles. I'd mentioned seeing him in court the day before to Layla, but she'd shifted the subject quickly. Not to mention Ayat and Uzma, who have it in for me. Watching Shahzad frighten Uzma might have been satisfying, but the humiliation still burned hot and fierce. If I could convince your father to give me the run of the palace, we could stay out of each other's ways. Layla's eyes dashed back to the ground, and she chewed at her lip anxiously. I knew her well enough by now to recognize when she was thinking something over. I also knew better than to interrupt someone smarter than me when they were thinking. Something else I'd learned from Shahzad.
Bassam turns 13 the day after tomorrow.
Layla spilled the words out in a rush. Whatever I'd been expecting her to come out with, that wasn't it.
Bassam is one of my father's sons by his wife, Thana. My father has a tradition. For every one of his sons on their 13th birthday, he teaches them to shoot a bow, as my grandfather did for his sons, and his father before him. They are not to eat again until they eat something they have killed themselves. He has done it with every one of his sons.
Not every single one. How had Ahmed and Jin spent their 13th birthdays? They hadn't been hunting with their father. Had they been on a ship or some foreign shore? Had they even known what day it was to be able to mark it? I had an image of a scene that never was, the two of them standing side by side with their father's hands on their shoulders, bowstrings drawn back, competing to impress him.
"He'll come to the harem for Bassam."
Layla returned her eyes to her work, the small clay man. She was sculpting a face for him.
"If you wanted to ask him for something." The largest of the harem gardens was twice the size of the rebel camp. A huge swath of green crowned with a blue lake that rolled down from the walls of the palace, across the cliff that overlooked the sea, before slamming hard into another wall. Another border, the edge of the palace. The water was dotted with fat birds, flapping their glaringly pale feathers lazily, sending water droplets sprawling in a bright arc through the sun. From my position, sitting by the iron gate that led back into the heart of the harem, it looked like a picture printed in a storybook. The Sultan was standing on the shore with a boy I guessed was Bassam. This son was thin and wiry and trying hard to look older than he really was. He held a long bow drawn back across his body, arms shaking just a little bit from the effort, clearly trying to hide it from his father. I'd watched him miss a dozen shots already, the arrows splashing uselessly into the water. After each shot came an exercise in patience as Bassam tossed a handful of bread into the lake and then withdrew to wait for the birds to come back and settle, until they felt safe enough again for him to try to kill them. Now his father reached out, resting one reassuring hand on his shoulder. The way the boy swelled happily under his touch, I half wondered if he'd been missing on purpose to steal a bit more time with his father. I imagined a younger djinn standing there in Bassam's place. I'd never seen a person need anyone else less than djinn did. It was hard to picture how he would react to his father's hand on his shoulder, if he would have held himself straighter too, eager for his father's pride. Bassam loosed the bowstring with one easy gesture. I knew with the practiced eye of a girl from Dustwalk that this shot was different from the others. The arrow flew true, passing straight through the neck of the nearest duck. The bird let out a pained squawk that sent the rest of the flock darting up in the air in a panic. A servant scrambled forward, pulling the bird out of the water by its long neck. The Sultan laughed, throwing his head back as he clapped his son on the shoulder proudly. There was no mistaking the look of pure joy that passed over the young prince's face. For just a moment, in the late afternoon sun, they might have been any father and son sharing a moment of happiness. And then the Sultan's eyes fell on me, hovering on the edge of the garden. He patted his son on the shoulder again, squeezing it tightly with pride, before sending the boy on his way, carrying the dead bird slung over his shoulder. When his son had vanished, he gestured me over. "Hardly anybody uses bows anymore, you know," I said when I was close enough to be heard. "Guns are cleaner."
"But not so quiet when you are trying to hunt," the Sultan said. "They scare off your prey. Besides, this is a tradition. My father did it for me, and his father did it for him."
And the Sultan had killed his father, and now a handful of his sons were counting on following that tradition, too.
"What do you want, little Demji?"
I ran my tongue along my teeth nervously. Chances were he'd see right through me. But Shahzad had said it herself the day Saida was brought back. We needed eyes in the palace. The whole palace. I could be those eyes. "I want to be able to leave the harem."
"I couldn't leave the palace, but information could.
Shahzad had put Sam on the rebellion's payroll. The past 3 nights, since the day Iz had dropped paper from the sky, I'd had a standing meeting with Sam at dusk by the Weeping Wall. Shahzad would figure out what to do about him later,
But for now, his only task was to slip into the harem every night to meet with me and make sure I hadn't sold out the whole rebellion on a royal order. It was an awfully boring task. Or, as Sam put it, it was the easiest money he'd ever made, being paid to come look at a pretty girl every night. If I succeeded here, I could make his job a little more interesting. The Sultan played with the string of his bow.
And you want to leave because...
Because I can't stand it there much longer. It was a truth. A half-truth. And it wasn't going to be enough. And I can't stand your son. The Sultan leaned on the bow.
Which one?
He asked wryly. There it was again. That faint prickle down my skin, like we were both in on a secret, like we were both playing some game. No, that was ridiculous. If he knew I was allied with Ahmed, all he had to do was command me to tell him where he was. He could use me to lead him to Shahzad, and from there the rest of the rebellion.
Kadir.
I shook off the feeling. He looks at me like I'm a flower in that garden for him to pluck. The Sultan twanged the string of the bow again, like he was playing a musical instrument.
You know that you are my prisoner, little Demji. If I wanted to, I could order you to lie in one spot completely still until I needed you for something. I could make you grow roots and stay there waiting for an order, or...
The Sultan paused, twanging the bowstring pointedly.
To be plucked.
My skin crawled.
But I admire you coming to find me here. Tell me, little Demji, can you shoot?
Yes, I said, because as much as I didn't care for him to know just how good I was with a gun, I couldn't lie. Shahzad always said our greatest strength was being underestimated, but the Sultan always saw through me when I tried to dodge around a truth with a half-truth.
I can shoot.
He extended the bow towards me. I didn't take it immediately.
You want something, he said. People who want things have to earn them.
I know how to earn things. I didn't grow up in a palace.
Good,
the Sultan said, that hint of Jin's smile lingering.
Then you should understand this. Take the bow.
I did as I was told because I didn't have a choice, though I didn't know if he'd meant to give me an order.
If you can bring down a duck, I will give you free range of the palace, at least as much as anyone else has. If you don't, well, then I hope your bed is comfortable, because you will lie there a very long time.
I ran my fingers down the taut string of the bow. It was an old weapon, something from the storybooks, before guns. I remembered some legend about the archer who took out a rock's eye with an arrow. I stood in a shooting stance and tried to pull the string back.
Not like that.
The Sultan's hands were on my shoulders. I tensed automatically. But there was nothing lingering in the way he touched me. He gripped my shoulder like he had the young princes, like I'd seen fathers in Dustwalk do when they were teaching their sons to shoot a gun. No one had ever done that for me. I'd taught myself to shoot while my father was drunk. And not really my father, anyway, though he cared about whether I lived or died just as much as my real father did, as it turned out.
Widen your stance, he ordered, lightly kicking my ankles apart with his instep, and draw the bow across your body.
I was keenly aware of him watching me as I drew the bowstring back. I took aim at the nearest duck the same way I would with a gun. I lined up my sight carefully. If I had a gun, my bullet would go straight through the bird. I'd gotten good at killing birds in the past few months. When you were camping in the mountains, it was helpful to be able to hunt. I loosed the bowstring. It scraped painfully along my arm. The arrow flew and missed the bird by a foot, plunging into the water. The flock of birds panicked at the noise, spiraling upwards into the sky in a flapping mess of feathers and squawking. I swore, dropping the bow, clutching my scraped arm.
Let me see.
The Sultan took hold of my wrist, another order I couldn't disobey. My forearm was already welting.
You should have an arm guard,
he commanded.
Here.
He pulled his shima off from around his neck. It was the color of the fresh saffron and dishes in the harem. He wrapped it neatly around my arm. The sight of it brought on a pang of longing as I remembered my old red shima, Jin. The Sultan finished tying off the shima with a final yank, fastening the knot around my wrist.
When the birds return, try again. And this time, draw the bowstring higher, closer to your cheek.
I had to obey, though I half thought he had forgotten who he was speaking to, that he meant them as instructions more than orders. We waited in silence until the birds returned and settled again. I wanted to call them stupid for coming back to something that might get them killed so readily. But then I was standing next to the Sultan of my own will. I missed again with my second shot, and my third. I could feel my neck prickling with shame, keenly aware of the Sultan watching me miss over and over. I needed to win. I needed to be able to leave the harem. I needed to save my family from my father. Your Exalted Highness. A servant's voice made us both turn around. He was bent low.
You are awaited for negotiations by the Gallen ambassador.
My ears perked up. It was starting. The negotiations for this country. To turn us back over to them. Why I needed to be able to report back. Wait! I called out as the Sultan turned to go. I can do this! The Sultan considered for a moment, and then he nodded.
Then find me when you have.
The sun crept across the sky as I tried. I could feel the sweat running down my neck, and I was half tempted to unwrap the shima from my arm and tie it around my head, but the throbbing welt there told me not to. There was nothing to be done about the blistering in my fingers, though, or the creeping ache in my arm, as my muscles protested being pulled back the same way one more painful time, shaking to release the bowstring. Some servants came and placed a jug of water and a bowl of dates next to me when the sun got high. I ignored them both. I could do this. I pulled back. Another arrow dove into the water. The birds scattered. I cursed under my breath. Damn this! I had done harder things. Before the birds could fully escape, I reached down and plucked out another arrow. I knocked it quickly and aimed for the still flapping, squawking mess of birds. I found the duck I wanted to hit, and I didn't hesitate. I didn't waste time trying to line up my shot. I aimed with certainty, the way I always had with a gun, and I loosed the arrow. The duck separated itself from the flock, plummeted, and hit the grass even as my heart took off. I barged through the palace, dripping a trail of blood behind me as I held the dead bird by the neck. The Sultan had told me to come find him when I'd succeeded, and the tug of an order on my gut kept me moving. I didn't think about what I was doing until I'd pushed past the guard, who didn't try to stop me, and burst through the doors. Dozens of heads turned to look at me as I crashed in. A thought flitted through my mind that I shouldn't be doing this, but it was a little late for that. I strode up to the table, my eyes on the Sultan, and slammed my prize down on the table in front of him, making his cup shake. The Sultan looked at the dead duck. It was only then that I took stock of my surroundings. The council room was full to bursting with men in uniforms. Uniforms of all sorts. Golden Mirajin uniforms and the blue of the Galen Empire. And they were all staring at me. A wild-eyed girl who had just slammed a dead duck with an arrow through its neck down on the table in front of her sultan. Prince Rahim was hiding a smile under the pretense of scratching his nose, but nobody else seemed amused. I had just interrupted one of the sultan's councils to decide the outcome of the ceasefire and the fate of our whole country with a dead duck. I wondered if this was what would cost me my head. Well, it seems you are a half-decent shot after all, the Sultan said, too low for anyone else to hear. You will leave the harem any time you please. There was a short pause in which a moment of hope bloomed that he might really leave that loophole for me, one that would allow me to slip out of his grip and back to the rebellion. But you will do so with a guard, and you will not leave the palace. My hope died. I was stupid to even entertain it to start with. The Sultan wasn't an incautious man. And then, raising his voice, someone take this duck to the kitchens and my demji to somewhere she belongs. I saw the Galen delegation's heads lift at the word demji. They'd call me a demon, but they knew what that word meant all the same. I wondered if the Sultan was rubbing me in their faces. That didn't seem much of a political tactic. A servant lifted the duck by the neck gingerly. The papers spread across the desk shifted as he did. I caught sight of a map of Mirajin drawn in faded black ink, marked with newer blue lines. On our half of the desert. It was barely a glimpse of a corner, but it was enough. I saw it. Circled in fresh blue ink was a tiny black dot labeled in careful print, Sara Motai. My mind dashed to Samira, to the rebels Shazad was going to send to hold the city, to Ikar on the walls, and the women who'd chosen to stay behind. All of them sitting like a bullseye inside the blue ink circle. A servant was already taking my arm, urging me out of the room, trying to move me on, but I couldn't go, not without knowing what was happening to the city we'd already given so much to free. My mind started running, trying to find a way to stay, to get those papers. The Galen ambassador was talking to the Sultan now. We have a command, 1,000 men strong, coming from the homeland with His Majesty for Aurangzeb. They will need to be armed if they are to hold Sara Motai. Furthermore, he's lying. The words slipped out. The servant holding my arm hissed a warning through his teeth, tugging me towards the door harder now. But the Sultan held up his hand, stopping him. What was that, little demji? He's lying, I said again, louder this time. I tried the next words on my tongue, looking for the untruth. The Galen troops coming with their king aren't as many as he says. There it was. The Sultan ran one calloused finger in a ring around the rim of his glass. His mind was as quick as Ahmed's. I was a demji. If I said someone was lying, then that was God's honest truth. Where did you learn Galen? The Sultan asked me. Now that was a dangerous question. Some of the truth of it was jinn and a long desert crossing and sleepless nights keeping watch. The last counties suffered under the Galen Alliance. It was a half-truth folded up in deception, usually too obvious to get past the Sultan. But I was offering him a gift. It might be enough. And us Demji, we pick things up fast. The Sultan's finger made another thoughtful loop of the rim of his glass.
I am sorry that you suffered, he said finally. Much of my desert did.
Finally, he addressed the translator.
Tell the Galen ambassador that I know there aren't 1,000 Galen soldiers arriving with his king, and that I want the real number.
The translator's eyes darted nervously between the Sultan and me as he spoke. The Galen ambassador looked surprised as the words reached him. His eyes flicked to me, seeming to understand that I had something to do with this. But he didn't miss a beat as he started speaking again in that guttural language of the West. I didn't catch every word, but I did catch the number.
He's still lying, I said again quickly. There aren't 500.
The Sultan considered me as he spoke to his translator.
Tell the ambassador that perhaps lying is more tolerated in Galandi, but in Miraji it is a sin. Tell him that this is not the first time since our alliance ruptured that one of his countrymen has tried to deceive me into providing weapons for their troops overseas in order to continue their war in the north, under the guise of arming only those allies coming to our desert. Tell him that he has one more chance to tell me the real number, or I will halt negotiations altogether until his king arrives.
200.
The translator spoke finally, after a tense moment. The Sultan's eyes flicked to me along with the rest of the room.
It's the truth.
It rolled easily off my tongue. Well,
the Sultan tapped the edge of his glass.
That's a fairly substantial difference, isn't it, Ambassador? No, there's no need to translate that.
He waved as the translator started to lean in to speak.
The ambassador understands my meaning, and I think he and everyone else here understands that they are better off not lying to me.
Sit down, Amani. He gestured to a seat behind himself. It was an order. I couldn't disobey it, and I wanted to stay. This was what I had asked for. But my legs still shook a little as I folded down onto the cushion behind the Sultan. It wasn't until I was settled that I realized he had called me by my name, not Little Demji. I had his attention now. I just prayed I didn't have it enough for him to start calling me the Blue-Eyed Bandit.
Chapter 24.
The duck I'd killed was served dressed in candied oranges and pomegranates on a platter the color of Hala's skin, my arrow still through its neck. I wondered if that was part of the lesson. When a bullet disappeared inside flesh, you could almost forget it. The arrow wasn't that kind. The council had gone on well past the sunset as translators worked frantically, translating Galen and Albish and Sichian and Gamenix. My head was churning with everything I'd heard in that room, turning it over and over like a prayer until I knew it by heart. I was going to try my damned hardest not to forget a word of it before I could get the news out to Shazad. One wrong detail, one point misremembered, and I could cost thousands of lives. I tried to sift out anything useless with every rotation through my head, leaving only what I could use. The Sultan was going to march troops to take back Saramotai. If negotiations were successful, the city would go back to the Galen's hands. A direct access point back into the desert and into Amanpour. Amanpour was allied with the Albish. There was an Albish camp on the border that would be in their path. They would march in 3 days. The Sultan was going to march troops to take back Saramotai.
You seem distracted.
The Sultan interrupted my thoughts as he settled across from me. Your rooms are just about the same size as the whole town where I grew up. It was a quick jab, meant to distract him, lest he think to order me to tell him what I was thinking about. I'm considering everything I'm going to tell the rebellion about your plans. Truth be told, his rooms were the size you'd expect for the ruler of the whole desert. I was brought in only as far as the antechamber, but I could see more doors leading off to a bedchamber with a thick red carpet and into private baths on another side. The walls in the receiving chamber were gold and white mosaics that reflected the light of the oil lamps around us so well, I almost thought it was still day, except that above us a huge glass dome gave a clear view of the sky, and to one side a balcony overlooked the sheer drop down the cliffs to the sea. Dust Walk. He seemed to pull the name from the far reaches of his mind. Tell me about it. It was an order, whether he meant it to be or not. It's a small town at the end of the desert. I grew up there. It was the truth, and it was obedience to his order, even if it wasn't what he was after. One wrong word about Dust Walk and I might give away everything. I'd rather not talk about it. For all the size of the room, the table we were seated at was small enough that if he'd wanted to, he could have reached across it and slit my throat with the long knife he was toying with. I didn't like being around the Sultan any longer than I had to. Not when he had so much power over me. Not when all it would take was one false word for him to find out who I was. Besides, it was after dark, which meant I was already late to meet Sam by the Weeping Wall. I hadn't told him about my plan to get out of the harem, seeing as I had no way of being sure I'd succeed or not. I sure hadn't been expecting the plan to succeed so well that it would end with me sitting across from the Sultan. For once, I had a whole lot more to tell Sam than he had to tell me. I just had to get back in time to meet him, and before I accidentally revealed the whole rebellion to the Sultan. He was watching me now, as if wondering whether to push the point of my hometown or release me from the order. But I was beginning to understand how the Sultan worked. If I gave him some truth, some weakness on my own, he'd stop circling me. I hated that godforsaken dead-end town. I gave him that admission. Please don't make me talk about it. He considered me slowly. You hated everything about it? I was about to tell him yes, but it wouldn't get past my tongue. Tamid, I realized. That was holding me back. I worried at one of the scars healing on my arm, feeling the little piece of metal shift underneath. I ought to hate him now, but I didn't know if I could hate him back then. No, I said finally. Not everything. I thought he would press me, but he just nodded. Help yourself to the food. Another order I couldn't disobey. I had to make him order me to leave. I couldn't last a whole dinner with the Sultan pulling little truths out of me one by one. Why am I here? I started to spear the oranges off the duck one by one, putting them onto my plate. You've got a whole garden full of wives and daughters. You could pluck one of them out to eat with you if you're lonely. I knew I was crossing into dangerous territory now. But if I was going to get expelled back to the relative safety of the harem in time to meet Sam, I couldn't mince my words. But the Sultan just sighed in resignation as he knocked my fork aside and started to carve a knife through the brown, crackling flesh. Perhaps I just enjoy your company. I don't believe you. I watched the knife work its way through the skin, cutting a perfect round circle off the bone. You're right. Perhaps enjoy is a strong word. He placed the meat carefully onto my plate for me. I find you interesting. Now. The Sultan drew back.
Eat something.
I ignored the meat and leaned across the table to spear another candied orange straight off the skin of the duck instead. It hit my tongue in a burst of sweet and bitter like nothing I'd ever had. I leaned across again to take another one while still chewing the first. I caught sight of a faint smile on the Sultan's face.
What?
I asked, mouth full.
Nothing.
The Sultan was still toying with the knife in his hand.
I just wish you could see the look on your face. If it could be bottled, it would be the elixir the alchemist Medat was hunting for.
In the stories, Medat was an alchemist of great talent and great misery who lost his mind trying to make and bottle joy, since he could not find it in the world.
Then again,
the Sultan switched his grip on the knife, sawing at the meat of the duck I'd killed.
If I could have bottled the look on our foreign friends' faces when you dropped this onto the council table, that would also give me a great deal of joy.
He carved a leg of the duck and placed it on his own plate. Last time I'd eaten a duck, it had been one Iz had caught in Ilyaz. It still had the marks of a crocodile's teeth through it, and the fat spat off it into the fire, making Jin curse when a bit sizzled and hit his wrist. Now I was taking food from the same hands that had held his mother down and claimed her by force when the Sultan was the same age as Jin, probably in these same rooms.
Your Exalted Highness.
The servant had appeared at the door so silently that I started. He was dropped into a deep bow at the door.
The Gallen ambassador has asked to see you. I advised him you were otherwise occupied, but he has been very insistent.
The Gallen ambassador summons me to him in my own palace.
The Sultan sounded more resigned than anything as he pushed away from the table.
Excuse me.
My eyes followed him all the way to the door. I was on my feet as soon as he'd disappeared. I flung open two wrong doors until I found the one that led to his office. Facing me, instead of a wall, was a huge glass window overlooking Isman. From all the way up here in the night, the city looked like a second sky, windows dancing with lights like stars across an otherwise dark sea. The Sultan's kingdom spread out below him. It was the closest I'd come to Isman since the day I woke up in Tamid's workroom. I resisted the impulse to press my hands against the glass like a child. The other three walls seemed designed to match the window by night. Blue plaster, inset with what looked like yellow glass stars that would catch the sun in the day. It reminded me of Ahmed's pavilion, back in a home that was gone now. I tried to imagine my prince here when we took the city, keeping the peace. But right now we were still in the middle of a war, and I wasn't going to pass up an opportunity to find something that might win it. The room was dominated by a huge desk that was covered in papers and books and maps and pens. I doubted he'd miss some of it if it went missing. It was just a question of what to take. The Sultan is coming back. I tried to say the words out loud, but they wouldn't cross my tongue. I was safe for now, as I started to carefully lift papers off the desk, holding them up to the glow of light from the city through the window. I tried over and over again to repeat the words as I worked. An early warning system. I found a sheet of papers scribbled with figures and numbers I didn't understand. Another one was a map of Miraji. It detailed troop movements, but those I'd heard about already in the meeting earlier. My fingers faltered over a familiar-looking drawing of armor. It was the suit of metal they'd put on Noorsham. There were words scribbled along the edges. The ones used to control him. There were more schematics like it underneath, and others for what looked like machine parts. One of the pieces of paper was held down by a tiny piece of metal the size of a coin. My name was carved into it, along with a jumble of other words in the first language. So this was what I had under my skin. I fought my urge to fling it through the window and watch the glass shatter. I took one of the sketches and kept exploring. I pulled out a few interesting-looking pieces of paper. One looked like supply routes. Shazad would be able to decipher that easier than I could. There was another one that looked like a map of Isman. There were dots of red ink interspersed across the paper. I held it up to the light, trying to figure out what they might be marking. But I didn't know Isman. The Sultan is coming back. The words slipped out into the silence of the room, setting off a jump of panic in my chest. I didn't have any pockets. I shoved the papers into the waist of my shalwar as I hurried out of the study, tugging my kurti back down over it. I was back at the table, picking at my food when the Sultan reappeared, taking his seat across from me. "What did he want?" I asked as he picked the knife back up. I prayed he couldn't hear the raggedness of my breathing. "You," he said it in such a matter-of-fact way that it took me aback. "You know, in the Galen's so-called religion, they believe first beings are creatures of evil, and their children are monsters."
"I know what they believe."
My mouth had suddenly gone dry. I reached for the pitcher of sweet wine. The sudden movement made the paper stuffed inside my clothes crackle, and I stilled. "They want me to hand you over." If the Sultan had noticed the noise, then he was doing a mighty fine job of hiding it. "To be brought to justice, they say, which is a pretext, of course. They are hiding behind religious righteousness because they don't want to admit that you are a serious threat to their being able to lie to my face and sway an alliance back in their favor." One of them called me a barbarian. I heard the bile on my own tongue. As far as I was concerned, killing off first beings and Demji was more barbaric than killing a duck. "Good," the Sultan said. "It would serve all of them well to remember that the people of Miraji can hold their own, even if it is just against a duck." I wasn't sure where the swell of pride came from. "You want to know why you're here, Amani, dining in my chambers? It sends a message. When we were allied with the Galen, I would have had to hand you over to hang. Now..." He picked up the pitcher I'd been too frightened to reach any further for. "You are free to be my guest."
"You hate them." I couldn't keep it in any longer. "They hate us. They're using us. Why make another alliance?"
My voice had risen without my meaning it to. The Sultan turned his dark gaze on me. It struck me again how Ahmed had his eyes. Then he grinned, like he was surprised by a child doing something particularly clever. "You sound a lot like the folk who follow my rebel son."
"You asked me about Dustwalk."
I diverted his attention away from Ahmed. "I'm from the deepest, darkest parts of your desert. I've seen firsthand what your alliances have done to folk. Cities under Galen rule where it was the law to shoot a Demji in the head. Everybody in Dustwalk working for as close to nothing as you can get without starving to make weapons for foreigners. It made for a poor, starving, frightened desert."
"How old are you, Amani?"
17.
I pulled myself up to my full height, trying to look it, careful of the stolen papers sticking to my skin as I moved. The bone of the duck leg on his plate crackled under his knife.
"You weren't even alive when I took my father's throne. Even those who were have forgotten how things were back then. We were at war, and it wasn't one that we should have been fighting. The war between the Galen and the Albish. We were a prize in the race between all of our foreign friends. Half the countries in the world wanted to claim our land. But in the end, it came down to those two ancient enemies and their never-ending war of false beliefs. The leg of the duck finally came free in a snap of cartilage and sinews, ripping free under the sawing of the Sultan's knife. There was something about the noise of cracking bone echoing around the polished marble halls and glass dome that set my teeth on edge. The Sultan calmly spooned orange sauce across the flesh as he spoke. And my father let it happen. He was foolish and cowardly. He thought we could fight the same way our country had in my grandfather's day. He thought we could stand against two armies and somehow not get annihilated. Even General Hamad advised my father he couldn't win a war on two fronts. Well, Captain Hamad, then. I made him a general after his advice proved to be so sound. He was talking about Shahzad's father. General Hamad had no loyalty to this sultan. Shahzad had always known her father despised his ruler. But he had backed the sultan's ideas 20 years ago all the same. There was a time when even a man on our side had thought our enemy was in the right. The only way to win was to form an alliance, grant them access to what they wanted from us on our terms. My father wouldn't do it. Neither would my brother, who had won the Sultan trials. Just because he was able to best 11 of our brothers in an arena, somehow that made him fit to decide the fate of this country. Not any more fit than Kadir was, but I didn't interrupt. Getting myself turned out of the Sultan's presence didn't seem so important now. I'd learned history in school, but it was different to hear it from the Sultan's own tongue. It would be like hearing the tale of the first mortal from Bahadur, who would have stood with the other Jean at the birth of mortality and watched him face down death. The Sultan seemed to sense my attention on him all at once. He looked up from where he was sawing at his meat, glancing between my empty hands and my still full plate. I did what needed to be done, Amani, he said calmly. He had chosen a side to keep us from being torn apart between two of them. In one bloody night, Prince Oman, a nobody among the Sultan's sons, too young even to be allowed to compete for Sultan, had led the Galen armies into the palace, killed his own father, and slain the brothers he knew would stand between him and the throne, the Sultan and the others who had fought in the trials. By morning, he sat in his father's place, and the Galen were our allies, or our occupiers. What I did 20 years ago was the only way to keep this country from falling completely into their hands. The Galen have annexed enough countries. I couldn't allow us to be next. He sawed at his food carefully as he spoke. The world is a lot more complicated than it seems when you are 17, Amani. And how old were you when you turned our country over to the Galen? I knew he hadn't been all that much older than I was now. The same age as Ahmed, give or take. The Sultan smiled around the piece of duck he was chewing. Young enough that I spent the next 19 years trying to find a way to drive them out. And I was very close to succeeding, you know. Norsham. He'd been trying to use my brother, Ademji, as a weapon to kill the Galen, and never mind his own people who wound up caught in the crossfire. A little more time, and I could have rid this country of them forever. He picked up his wine, drinking deep from the cup. A little more time. If we hadn't interfered, if we hadn't saved Fahali, saved our people, saved my brother, and he reckoned he could have saved the whole country. They would have been a sacrifice for the greater good.
You're not eating.
I wasn't hungry, but I speared a piece of cold meat all the same. The orange had congealed into a sticky paste around it. It was too sweet when it hit my tongue. You're wrong.
The words, too, were sticky on my tongue. I couldn't spit them out.
I wished Shahzad were here. She knew more than I did. She'd read up on history and philosophy and had better schooling with her father's tutors than I'd had in a busted-down schoolhouse at the end of the desert. She was better at debating things than I was. But we'd both been in Saramotai, a power play disguised in a just cause.
Awfully convenient how saving this country meant you becoming Sultan without the Sultim trials.
The Sultim trials are another antiquated tradition.
The Sultan placed his wine back on the table, carefully steadying it by the stem.
Hand-to-hand combat between brothers and riddles to prove a man had half a brain might have been the best way to pick a leader when we were just a collection of tents in the desert fighting the destroyer of world's monsters. But wars are different now. Wit and wisdom are not the same. Neither are skill and knowledge, and sultans don't go out on the battlefield with a sword anymore. There are better ways to lead.
You held a Sultim trial anyway.
I reached for another orange off the duck, moving slowly so as not to rustle the stolen supply route map hidden in my waistband.
Yes, and look how well that served me. I acquired a rebel son out from my throne as a result of it.
He laughed to himself as he pushed the gold platter closer towards me. A low, self-deprecating chuckle that reminded me of Jin.
I had to hold the trials to show the people that though I had taken my throne by other means, I was still upholding the traditions of our country. As antiquated as it is, it can still serve a purpose.
He settled back in his seat again, watching me eat.
In some countries, the people love their royals best when they are celebrating weddings or new royal children. If only that were the case with my people, I would never run out of their love. But the Mirajin people are not so easily bought. They never love my family more than when we are fighting to the death for the right to rule them. They never love me so much as they do on Aurangzeb, when I remind them that I killed 12 of my brothers with my own hands in one night.
He said it so calmly that whatever warmth his laugh had brought into the room drained out of it instantly.
I try not to remind them that it was the same night I handed them over to the enemy they hate so much. But really, this is a violent country, Amani. You're proof of that. Our dinner is proof of that.
He tapped the arrow through the duck's neck.
I put a knife in your hand, and your first instinct was to stab me.
You tried to stab me first, I objected without thinking.
That time he really did laugh, in earnest. This is a hard desert. It needs a hard man to rule it.
A harder man than Ahmed. The thought shot across my mind again.
I shoved it away as forcefully as I could.
The Sultan had said it himself. Rulers were different these days, and what Ahmed lacked in strength, he made up for by being good. A better man than most of us. He was so good, in fact, that Shahzad and I hadn't even hesitated when it came to taking Delilah to Saramotai. We disobeyed our ruler without a second thought, without any fear of consequences.
Shahzad would say it was a poor ruler who needed to rely on fear to make his people obey. I might not be so well-versed in philosophy, but it seemed to me like without obedience, a man was no ruler at all. Was Ahmed really going to run this whole country if he couldn't even get me and Shahzad and his sister to fall in line?
There is nothing I wouldn't do for this country, Amani. Still.
He smiled indulgently.
I will grant you that Kadir would perhaps have not been my first choice to succeed me, were it not for the trials.
He played with the stem of his glass, seeming to drift far away. Who would you have picked?
I wasn't sure if I meant it as an earnest question or a challenge of whether he actually knew any of his sons well enough to pick one.
But the Sultan seemed to sincerely consider my question.
Rahim is a great deal stronger than I gave him credit for as a boy.
Layla's brother, the prince who held himself like a military man and who had challenged Kadir in court and sat on the war council with him.
He might have made a good ruler if I'd kept him closer, and if he weren't so ruled by his emotions.
The light through the glass dome caught the rim of his glass as he spun it.
But truthfully, had he only been raised in my palace, Ahmed might be the best choice.
That caught me off guard. You mean the rebel prince? I said carefully, all too aware I was treading on dangerous ground now.
My son believes he is helping this country. I know he truly does.
He called Ahmed his son. Ahmed always called the Sultan his father, too.
Jin never did. To Jin, he was always the Sultan, like he was trying to sever any strings between himself and his father.
But it seemed like Ahmed and the Sultan had less interest in severing those ties.
The trouble with belief is that it's not the same as truth.
The memory rose from the quiet part of my mind, where most of my memories of Jin lived. A night in the desert, Jin telling me belief was a foreign language to logic. But what else did we have?
The Sultan let go of the stem of his glass. He wiped his fingers clean of grease and orange pulp before pulling a familiar piece of yellow paper from his pocket. It was folded into smaller squares, and it looked worn out from folding over and over again.
From across the table, I looked at Ahmed's son on it upside down. A new dawn, a new desert.
These are all very fine ideas he has,
the Sultan said.
But you sat in that council today, Amani. Do you think my son knows how many guns we can promise the Galen without overtaxing our own resources? Do you think he knows that the Albish Queen, the latest in the long line of sorceresses, is rumored to have hardly any magic left to defend her country with? That the Xichian Emperor has not picked an heir yet, and their whole country is on the brink of civil war?
He really seemed to expect me to answer. I don't know. It was the truth. I wasn't privy to everything Ahmed knew, but if I were being more than truthful, if I were being honest, I'd give him a real answer. No, he doesn't know. If the world were simple, the Sultan said as he smoothed the tract out across the table,
we could be free of foreign powers, an independent nation, but we are a country with borders, with friends and enemies at all of them. And unlike my son, I am not interested in conscripting this entire country to defend it. How many untrained men and women do you think have died fighting for his beliefs?
Rana's face invaded my mind. The little Demji from Saramotai. The stray bullet.
Watching the light in her hands extinguish as her power went, then her life. The Sultan's army had wanted her. But if it weren't for us trying to save her, she'd be here instead of me. She might be sitting on soft pillows, hair clean and scented with lavender, mouth sticky with candied oranges. Instead of turned to ashes on a funeral pyre and scattered into the desert sand.
If the throne changes hands, we will be invaded.
My son is an idealist. Idealists make great leaders, but they never make good rulers. So I'll tell you what I believe, Amani. I believe that if my son's rebellion were ever to succeed, or even to gain enough of a foothold to cast